Hi, everyone, and welcome to Franchise Interviews, Asking the Entrepreneur Who Owns One. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. Today, we have a very interesting show. We have very special guest, Kevin Hine, and Kevin is one of the top franchise attorneys and experts in the country. And that's coming up in segment two of Franchise Interviews on World Talk Radio, where the world comes to talk. So stick around, because we've got a great show. Always searching for the real thing.
Unlock your earning potential with a business to call your own with the Papa Lock Franchise Opportunity. Founded in 1991 by former law enforcement officers in Lafayette, Louisiana, Papa Lock is recognized as the leading locksmith franchise in the world, with 3,600 trained techs and licensed locksmiths serving a total population of more than 150 million in over 3,400 cities. Papa Lock provides multiple revenue streams to franchisees, such as locksmithing and car door unlocking, high-tech key generation, emergency roadside assistance, and emergency car door unlocking. If you would like to examine the Papa Lock franchise opportunity in more detail, please go to our website, www.papalock.com. That's www.papalock.com. Or call 337-233-6211. That number again is 337-233-6211.
Lock up your future today with Papa Lock. Take control of your destiny and increase your quality of life with Allegra Print and Imaging. This light manufacturing, professional business-to-business franchise offers two unique opportunities to entrepreneurs with little or no industry experience. Our conversion opportunity is an existing business model that provides immediate cash flow, experienced staff, and an established customer base, while the low-investment digital print center opportunity meets the growing digital printing, sign, and mailing service demands of businesses in small and medium markets. Realize your dream of owning your own business with the comprehensive support of one of the world's top franchisers. Call 888-258-2730 or visit www.allegranetwork.com and discover the power in the network.
Hello, Service Brands International. I got a problem. The more time I spend pursuing success, the less time I have to enjoy it. What am I going to do?
Don't worry. You made the right call. Service Brands International, a leading multi-brand franchisor, offers a variety of proven home services franchises that are ideally positioned for today's time-starved consumers and are exceptionally efficient to operate, giving you the time to run your business and time to enjoy your success.
There's Molly Maid,
a residential cleaning franchise.
Mr. Handyman,
the franchise solution for residential and commercial fix-it problems.
1-800-DRY-CLEAN,
the affordable franchise opportunity offering quality dry cleaning with the convenience of free pickup and delivery.
And Ducts.
That's DUCTZ, meeting the need for improved indoor air quality. For more information on how a Service Brands franchise can provide a life worth living, visit servicebrands.com.
That's servicebrands.com.
To reach a show host or guest during the live show, dial toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. Or, if outside the USA and Canada, dial 001-858-268-3068.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, Asking the Entrepreneur Who Owns One. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then this is a show to listen to. And today's show is being brought to you by Aaron's Sales and Lease Ownership Franchise Opportunity. And Aaron's is a New York Stock Exchange listed company and ranked number 58 among franchise chains in worldwide sales. Aaron's is reinventing the way a growing and underserved market acquires furniture, electronics, appliances, and computers. Now's a great time to join the Aaron's franchise family. And Don, welcome back on this Thursday, May 24th of 2007, Memorial Day weekend coming up. How's your week going, my friend?
Yeah, week's going fine, Marty.
Good, good.
Welcome back as well.
Thanks. Any plans for this weekend?
I'm just looking forward to having the 3 days off.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Having that extra day is always big, and then it shortens the week next week. And
it does.
Yeah, we have a party or two to go to.
Same here.
Hopefully the weather's nice and get out a little bit and start off the summer.
Absolutely. It feels like summer's here already, actually, doesn't it, though?
Yeah, lately. We've had a lot of sun lately, so.
Absolutely.
I think we were owed it for what we went through.
Oh, wow. It was. It was a long winter, that's for sure, you know, and spring. Our last show, Don, we got to meet with Harold Hill of the Franchise Opportunity Badass Coffee. It's an interesting concept. What were your thoughts on last week's show?
Yeah, he's a great guy.
It was a very interesting interview.
Yeah, nice interview. I like their whole approach, Marty. Their slow, strategic growth. Concentrating on getting solid franchisees. I love their name. They have an excellent website. Just a high quality product.
Absolutely.
You know, the coffee that they have in their shops. I love the Hawaiian theme. And
what
was he saying? Coffee is the second largest commodity in the world. I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. And that coffee that you mentioned, Don. I mean, when you talk about premium coffee, that's Kona coffee. I think it goes for about $50 a pound, if you can imagine that. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's pretty high quality. I mean, I mentioned to you, you know, I don't know if you, I know you're not a big coffee drinker. I drink coffee like it's going out of style, and I stopped by their booth several times, actually, and their coffee was truly out of this world, you know.
They got everything covered, the whole theme, the name, the
product,
really, and they're getting a lot of international interest, so, through Diamond Financial, we've financed some people, and so it's been a nice relationship with Harold.
Absolutely. As you mentioned, too, Don, I think it was a great story how they came up with the name Badass Coffee, because when you first hear it, you're kind of like taken back. I think a lot of people are, you know?
Right.
But it's really, the story was how the donkeys would carry the coffee through the mountains of Hawaii in the old days, you know? And actually, if you go to certain parts of Hawaii, you can actually still see donkey crossing signs. That's something that we don't see here, you know, where we live. And, as you mentioned also, it's a great culture. Harold spoke of they called it the Aloha Spirit, Don. It's kind of like being at peace with yourself, you know. And that's brought about in their franchise, you know. I think when you go into their cafes, that's what you feel, is you feel that Aloha Spirit when you go in there. So
also, people like a different experience. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and what I like about coffee, too, Don, is it is a nice repeat sale, you know, from a marketing standpoint. If you could build that customer loyalty, you know, I mean, people typically buy coffee every single day. Some people buy it twice a day, you know, and if you build up that customer relationship, you have a nice business there. So I think it's a great franchise, nice training program. I just say look out Starbucks, I think.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be a very big franchise. And I like, too, how you mentioned, they're not looking to get too big too fast either, Don, because that could be dangerous, you know.
I was surprised, too, at the the potential growth for specialty coffee. It's still such a small segment of the overall industry.
Absolutely.
A lot of room for growth in general. I've financed a bunch of different specialty coffee franchises last couple of years. So much more room for growth.
I would say so, yeah. So just really great show. I mean, for those listening today, if you missed the show, go to our show page. Actually, just click and you can hear the interview with Harold Hill of Badass Coffee. And we got a lot of great feedback on that show as well. A lot of people listened to it and said they really enjoyed it, you know. So that was great to hear, you know.
Yeah, like I told you, I also had someone we're helping with financing.
She heard the show.
She's even more excited about her investment and moving forward.
Well, I was excited too. I mean, after listening to that show, you know, I mean, it's, you know, even over the last month, if you think about it, Don, you know, from, you know, Jungle Quest, Aaron's, Badass Coffee. I mean, over those last three shows I listened to, I said, wow. I said, those are, you know, concepts I'd be interested in going into, you know, in the future, you know. So it's doing a good job here, you know. So what do we got going on today, Don?
Well, today, as we discussed, a meeting with Kevin Hine. He's a partner with the Denver Law Office of Snell and Wilmer, where he co-chairs the firm's retail and franchise services practice group, Marty. He's a founding chairman of the Colorado Bar Association subsection on franchise law. He's one of the top franchise attorneys in the country. He's going to be giving excellent advice today. So
great. I'm looking forward to that.
Next week, we're meeting with a franchise called Becoming Mom Pregnancy Spa and Imaging.
That's great.
Becoming Mom specializes in meeting the unique and ever-changing needs of your pregnancy. They've recently partnered with the internationally acclaimed Mamma Mio maternity skincare line to franchise its successful pregnancy spa and imaging center model. So,
right, absolutely.
There's going to be a whole lot to talk about
Yeah, it's going to be great. I know Connie, it was 30 minutes before the show we were talking about that, and, she's looking forward to hearing that show next week, because, as you know my wife's pregnant, so, she's kind of in that mode, and I know you've had that experience a couple of years ago, so I think your wife would certainly be able to relate to this. It's an interesting concept, so you can say.
No excuse for your wife to not miss that show.
She'll be there, yeah. Maybe we'll put her on the show as well.
Don't get crazy.
There you go.
Have her listen to it. It's good enough.
Absolutely.
No offense to Connie, but we have a lot of stuff to go over.
There you go. She'll actually replace us as a host, Don. She'd probably do a very good job.
I'm nervous about.
Right, we'd lose our job, so. Anyway, it was interesting, Don. One of our guests several weeks ago, it was probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I guess it was Jim Cohen, he mentioned that there's going to be some changes to the UFOC agreement, and in 37 days, the new franchise rule is going to go into effect. If anyone's listening for the first time, basically upon the first serious conversation a prospective franchisee has with a franchisor, they must be given a disclosure document, which is commonly referred to as a UFOC, and given a minimum of 10 days before they can make an offer or put down any money for the franchise. And this was something, it was written by David E. Holmes of Holmes & Lofstrom, LLP. Just a couple things it says here. It says, this new franchise rule is effective as of July 1st, 2007. But franchisors can phase in the new rule and use their current UFOC format or the new FTC rule format for 1 year from the effective date. As of July 1st, 2008, franchises can only be offered using the new FTC rule format, subject to minor changes to conform with state requirements. We anticipate that franchisors with 12/31/06 fiscal year will generally use the current UFOC for all of 2007 and will begin to work towards converting to the new format in late 2007 to prepare for filings consistent with the new rule in the spring of 2008. Some of these the basic changes, Don. I mean, there's a handful of them, but I'll just kind of go over the main ones. So the first personal meeting for providing a UFOC will no longer be present in federal law, but may remain in state regulations, allowing franchisors to have a face-to-face discussion without, this keyword, without the need to deliver a UFOC. So that's one change that's taken place. The 10-day rule, that's changing as well. So it's the 10 business day pre-sale disclosure requirement, sometimes confusing to apply, has been converted to a 14 calendar day requirement, subject to a prospective franchisee's request for earlier delivery. The completed agreement may now be in prospective franchisee's calendar days before signing or paying funds. That's another change. All franchisors will
now be allowed to use electronic means for delivery of the disclosure document. That helps a lot. I mean, again, you and I mean, contracts are constantly being submitted through email today. People are getting away from the mail, so that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Item 3, litigation. It says we'll include litigation filed by a franchisor against its franchisees. And this was something Jim Cohen also mentioned. He said earning claims will now be called financial performance representations, and that will also remain optional. So, I mean, I think the theme of this new franchise rule, Don, is that it looks like there's going to be more disclosure going on in these documents, which is a good thing.
People a couple more days, and
right.
By doing it electronically, it'll be easier to get the information to people faster.
Absolutely. And again, the more information you have, the better decision you can make, and that's to the benefit of the franchisor and the franchisee, because it is tremendously relationship driven, very, very important. And I guess, a lot of franchise attorneys, like our guest today, Kevin Hine, they're probably going to be very busy with this stuff over the next year, Don. I mean, when we had Nancy Lenard on the show as well, she, spoke about all the time that goes into these, UFOCs and things like that. So I guess it's going to be a very good year for franchise attorneys, that's for sure.
Yeah, and hopefully Kevin can shed some further light on this. And,
Absolutely.
That kind of and on that theme, let's just go right into this article we were working on last week.
Okay.
Because where we left it off was on Law and Order.
Right.
And this is an article called What a Ride from Entrepreneur Magazine, May edition, written by David Kaufman. It kind of gives a history of what's been going on in franchising the last 30 years. And we left off at Law and Order. It says, franchising's remarkable growth and success over the past 30 years owes much to federal and state franchise laws and regulations and the enlightened individuals who enforce them. Many folks forget that by the late 60s and 70s, the words franchise and fraud had almost become synonymous.
Right, right.
What happened was simple. As franchising exploded onto the scene in the 50s and 60s, story after story appeared in newspapers and magazines about how franchisors and franchisees were growing wealthy in this arena. That's when the criminal community, including organized crime, jumped in. Tens of thousands of people nationwide collectively lost hundreds of millions of dollars through criminal franchise enterprises. Enterprises that, using slick brochures and outright fraud, sold phantom, non-existent franchises to hapless victims.
Yeah.
15 states and the federal government fought back, enacting franchise registration and disclosure laws and embarking on an aggressive law enforcement campaign to eradicate fraud in the franchise arena. And you know what? It worked. Due to the diligent enforcement of these laws by federal and state regulators, who at the same time grew more understanding of legitimate franchisors' needs and wants, there hasn't been a major franchise scandal in this country in decades. That's pretty amazing.
Absolutely. I mean, this is where the, you know, the benefit of this franchise rule really came in, Don. You know, I mean, I think it was the best thing. You know, I've said it, you know, probably 20 times already, but the best thing that's ever happened to franchising, and I think in business in general, you know, is because, I mean, it really was becoming corrupt in the 1970s. And here you had some very successful franchises like McDonald's and you know, a bunch of others, and I think they basically approached the government and they said, look, you got to do something about this, because that could have destroyed franchising if they didn't create this franchise rule, you know, so
right.
It's a great thing, as you mentioned.
It says, in fact, during his time as New York Attorney General, New York's Attorney General, current Governor Eliot Spitzer observed how relatively clean the franchise marketplace has been. He says, there has been a notable absence of scandal, he said. When we look at the franchise market, we say remarkably that we have a great market that is healthy, growing, and generating jobs, investment, and confidence on the part of all involved. So, yes, franchising has had quite a run over the past 30 years. It's seen great growth, consolidation of both franchisors and franchisees, the maturation of relationships between them, and the continually growing public demand for franchising's products and services.
Right.
Now, rarely a day go by that any of us does not encounter or frequent a franchise establishment. And what does the future hold for franchising? Seemingly continued unbridled growth, further dramatic expansion into foreign markets, and sharply increased numbers of U.S.-based franchise networks. The past is prologue, observes IFA President Matthew Shea. In the three-year run-up to Entrepreneur's 30th anniversary, nearly 900 new concepts began franchising in the United States. Today, prospective franchisees have a wide range of franchise opportunities to select from in over 100 lines of business, offering business formats of all shapes and sizes. State franchise regulators concur, observing that in the past year alone, they witnessed a 20% spike in initial franchise registration applications submitted to their offices. So, and just ending the last paragraph, Marty, it says, pretty good for an industry that started with a Kentucky Colonel, Sanders.
Right, right.
Charging his first franchisees a nickel, a chicken royalty.
That's right.
A beverage,
great
McMaster
story.
Salesman, Ray Kroc, who just had to know why the McDonald brothers were ordering more of his machines than anyone. And a beleaguered father of young children, Kemmons Wilson, who after finding no family-friendly hotels to stay in while on vacation, started the Holiday Inn chain.
That's something.
So
it was a great article, Don.
I mean,
it was. It was very, you know, covering the whole history of, you know, franchising in general. But I think, you know, this is really an exciting time in franchising. That's for sure.
Right.
You know, so it's just really fantastic. I think what we'll do here is we'll take a break. I know Kevin is in the studio, and so we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more franchise interviews on World Talk Radio, where the world comes to talk.
World Talk Radio.
Create a rewarding future for you and your family as an Aaron Sales and Lease Ownership franchisee.
Aaron's is changing the way a growing and underserved market acquires necessities like furniture, appliances, electronics, and computers. The Aaron's franchise opportunity offers today's entrepreneurs, you, potential for profits and growth. Aaron's Sales and Lease Ownership is a division of Aaron's Rents Incorporated, a New York Stock Exchange-listed company with more than 50 years of enviable results. Aaron's is ranked number one in its category by Entrepreneur Magazine and 58th among franchise chains in worldwide sales by Franchise Times Magazine. Aaron's provides site selection assistance, comprehensive training, and traffic building marketing programs. Additionally, as a franchisee, you'll benefit from their national reputation, industry experience, operating systems, and manufacturing and distribution methods. For more information on the Aaron's franchise opportunity, call 1-800-551-6015. That's 1-800-551-6015. Or go to aaronsfranchise.com. That's AARONS franchise.com.
Ready for a great tasting dessert that's much better for you and your kids? Try the Miami Rice Pudding Company. Miami Rice Pudding Company offers over 35 flavors of rice pudding delivered in cups or cones with a customer's choice of toppings. This unbelievable franchise opportunity is introducing this great dessert concept to the malls, airports, art shows, and similar venues in your market. Miami Rice Pudding's goal is to help franchisees bring the healthy joy of flavored rice pudding to the world. Join our franchise system and open in your market with a low investment and operate both the fixed location and mobile units. Our system requires minimal food preparation and our pudding has a long shelf life. Mall chains are eager for us to expand to their locations because we're unique, competitive, nutritious, and a fun concept. Call us today, toll free at 1-866-6-EAT-RICE. That's 1-866-6-EAT-RICE. Or go to our website at MiamiRicePudding.com. That's MiamiRicePudding.com.
Tap into a $41 billion a year industry with Garlic Jims. Did you know Americans eat about 100 acres of pizza every single day, or about 350 slices per second? Garlic Jims has spent years looking high and low for a higher quality pizza that is delivered quick enough so that you're still hungry when it arrives. Garlic Jims makes the most delicious gourmet pizza and at the same time provides excellent and fast service to your door. Garlic Jims has perfected the science of prompt pizza delivery by learning and experimenting. The exciting twist to this is great pizza. Never again will you have to choose between great pizza and great service. Are you interested in owning a Garlic Jims? We're currently accepting applications to participate in our exciting world of gourmet pizza delivery and carryout. Talk to us and find out how we sold nearly 100 franchises in six states in our first 2.5 years of operation. To get started right away, go to www.garlicjims.com. That's www.garlicjims.com. Or call us 425-918-1900. That's 425-918-1900. Garlic Jims.
Everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, Asking the Entrepreneur Who Owns One. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then this is the show to listen to. And today's show is being brought to you by Aaron's Sales and Lease Ownership Franchise Opportunity. And Aaron's is a New York Stock Exchange listed company and ranked number 58 among franchise chains in worldwide sales. Aaron's is reinventing the way a growing and underserved market acquires furniture, electronics, appliances, and computers. Now's a great time to join the Aaron's franchise family. And today's guest is Kevin Hind, who is one of the top franchise attorneys and experts in the country. And Kevin is a partner with the Denver office of Snell and Wilmer LLP, where he co-chairs the firm's Retail and Franchise Services Practices Group. Kevin's also a founding chairman of the Colorado Bar Association subsection on franchise law, and also served from 1998 to 2001 as a Young Lawyers Division liaison to the ABA Forum on Franchise Law. Good morning, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today, Kevin?
Excellent.
Great. Kevin, joining us is my co-host. I think you know Don Johnson, president of Diamond Financial Services. And I know, Don, you wanted to say hi to Kevin.
Yeah, okay. Kevin, thanks a lot for your time today. We're really looking forward to the, you know, discussing franchising, all your years of experience in the industry. And it was nice seeing you at the show a couple months ago, meeting you, of course.
Absolutely. Thanks,
yeah,
guys.
It seems like yesterday, doesn't it, Kevin, that we were in Washington? It just goes by so fast, doesn't it?
It is amazing. I can't believe we're almost at the end of May.
It's crazy. It really does, you know. Kevin, since starting the radio show, Don and I have had some really interesting concepts on this show. From your experience, what makes a concept franchisable?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I think in my experience, and certainly we've worked with a significant number of emerging concepts, there are really probably four key elements that any business that is looking at franchising probably needs to consider. And the first, and I think the most important without question, is what I call unit economics. Unit economics really goes to, how much the individuals, whether it's a store or a business concept that's run out of somebody's home, how much the individual franchisee can make. And that is particularly important compared to the investment that the franchisee needs to make to get the business started. And I always tell clients when we're talking about franchising a new concept that you need to make sure that the business at the unit level can do three things. Number one, it has to be able to generate enough revenue, obviously, to cover its expenses.
Right.
The second is it needs to be able to generate enough revenue to cover, you know, a reasonable salary for the franchise owner or a manager that is in running the business. And the third thing is that it needs to give the franchisee a return on the investment. So if the franchisee is going to spend $200,000 to get the business up and running, there needs to be enough excess cash to give that person a return that's comparable or better than what that person could earn if you put that money into the stock market or some other kind of investment format.
Right, absolutely.
I think the second element has to be a reasonable demand for the product that you're serving. Sometimes people find such unique niches that when they try and expand out of a particular marketplace or a city or a geographic area, they find that there isn't significant demand for the product. It's not universally accepted. Sometimes you can overcome that by educating the population about your product, but that's a very expensive and time-consuming endeavor.
Sure.
And I always tell the story about a concept called Cincinnati Chili, or a product called Cincinnati Chili. I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to eat Cincinnati-style chili, but it's a very different chili than most of the country is familiar with. It's very popular in the upper Midwest part of the country. And years ago, I worked with a gentleman who had bought the regional rights for Colorado for Cincinnati Chili. And his plan was to open 20 or 30 different restaurants. Well, he was never able to get a single one open because people in Colorado just don't eat Cincinnati-style chili. So you really want to make sure before you try and roll something out on a grand scale that there's a real interest in your product.
Right, absolutely. That's interesting.
The third thing...
I guess, so how would you do that, Kevin? I guess there's outside companies. I guess that's...
Absolutely. I think if you're in certain kinds of businesses, you know there's a built-in demand. For example,
right.
If you're in the pizza business, you know that people eat pizza all over the country. So that may not be such a challenge. But if you really have a unique product or a unique service, it probably pays to engage one of the great franchise consulting firms around the country to go in and do some kind of a market analysis for you.
Right. Absolutely.
The third thing I think that people need to focus on is whether or not they can easily replicate their system. The more difficult, the more detailed the operation is, the harder it is to replicate. So, for example, take the food industry. You see lots and lots of franchise companies in the quick service restaurant segment, in the fast casual segment, but you see very few successful franchise companies in the fine dining or the white tablecloth segment.
True.
And the reason is that it's very difficult to teach other people to execute at that level. When you've got people coming in at a very high price point, they don't want just food, they want a good experience, and that requires a certain level of skill and expertise, and it's very hard to replicate that across restaurants even in a single city, much less across the country. So you want to make sure that you have something that's pretty easy to replicate and that you can train people on, because frankly you want people you want your franchisees to come in and be able to duplicate what you've done, or you're not going to build a very successful franchise system.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the biggest reasons people invest in a franchise, of course, the money aspect, but because of this, the simplicity, hopefully, that the franchisor puts together. So this is a big part of you know, what you're talking about here, Kevin.
Absolutely. And the hallmark of franchising, and I know that some people can be critical of this, but the hallmark of franchising is that you give people the same experience no matter what market they're in.
Exactly.
You know, and we all know that if we stop at a McDonald's, whether we're in Portland, Oregon, or Portland, Maine, that hamburger is going to be the same.
Right.
And it's the same experience, and people come to rely on that and count on that experience, and that's why franchising has been so successful in so many industries.
Absolutely.
You know, and the last thing I always tell people is that you better have a unique marketing proposition. If you're going to try and franchise something and it's already been done, then you're at a real disadvantage. If you're just going to roll out the next hamburger chain franchise, and there's nothing unique about what you do, then people are not going to be interested in buying into your system. They want to know, how do I compete with McDonald's, not how do I stand out there as a Me Too in comparison to McDonald's. So whether it's a new way of providing the service, whether it's a new way of collecting money, whether it's a new gimmick in terms of getting people in the door. I think of Pizza Patron, for example, the pizza chain out of Texas that serves predominantly the Latino market that recently started to accept pesos.
Right,
and,
we mentioned
and,
that.
I mean, that's a great marketing proposition. It's a way to say, look, yeah, we sell pizza, but boy, is this ever, you know, a unique way to get people in the door, people who have different currencies and who have different issues. You know, we're gonna service that market. That's something unique. And that's what makes that's one of the things that makes that chain particularly unique, and therefore, it's able to attract people to become prospective franchisees.
Yeah, that pizza chain got a lot of PR too, Kevin, from that whole thing. You know, by doing something different, you know, it was they were pretty much in every national newspaper across the United States.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, there's the old saying that, you know, good PR or bad PR is the same. It's going to drive people in the door.
Right.
And wasn't that your idea, Kevin? Not accepting pesos?
That I would love to say that was my idea, but I'm not
quite
that creative.
You know, you brought up a good point about the uniqueness here. I mean, I don't know if you listened earlier, but last week we interviewed Badass Coffee, and, you know, there's a lot of different coffee franchises, but they stand out because they're quality coffee. They have the Hawaiian theme.
Right.
They have a whole story behind it. It was why they're having success, Kevin, is this point you're bringing up about the unique marketing, you know, proposition.
Right. That's what I thought of, Don, as Kevin was explaining this. I thought of the same thing, Badass Coffee.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's a great example. There's lots of coffee purveyors out there.
Right.
What's the hook? What's the hook to get people to buy the franchise? And more importantly, what's the hook to get new customers in the door?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, Kevin, after it's determined that a concept is franchisable, then what's the next step?
Well, I think the next most important step is to put together a really solid business plan. You know, it's one thing to say, gee, I think I've met the criteria. It's another thing to say, now I know how to implement it. Because
right.
as I always tell people, when you transition from being an operator of a chain of, you name it, XYZ stores selling widgets, you're in a different business model. And we always tell people, you're no longer in the hamburger business. You're now in the franchise business. You're no longer in the drugstore business. You're in the franchise business. And that requires a whole different set of plans. It requires a whole different set of implementation skills, and frankly, it's going to require bringing on people that do things for your franchisees that you're not probably currently doing for your company-owned stores.
Right. They're definitely two different animals, Kevin, as you say.
Absolutely.
That's something. Interesting. Is there a particular format for a business plan that people need to adhere to, Kevin?
No, there really is not a one particular format. I wish that there was one magic business plan that I could send people to.
Right.
But really, a business plan is nothing more than putting a person's thoughts on paper in an organized manner.
Right.
And so there's lots and lots of different ways to do it, and frankly, there's some good software out there. There are lots of books that will guide you on how to prepare a business plan. It's not like preparing an offering circular where 23 items and you follow the format and everybody has the same looking offering circular. This is something truly that's going to be unique to each business, and it really needs to be workable. It needs to be workable not only for the business owner to sort of lay out his or her thoughts and ideas, but ultimately other people are going to need to see it too. If you're going to look for financing, your banker's probably going to want to see it. If you're going to look for investors, your investors are going to want to see it. If you're going to look to, if you're going to, you know, prepare franchise documents, the attorney you're working with would find it really helpful in order to prepare those documents. So it becomes a multi-purpose document, and it just needs to work.
Right, absolutely.
We tell people, Kevin, really just to keep it simple, myself being in the franchise financing business, it scares people.
Absolutely.
Business plan. They're thinking because they're investing in a franchise that they'll get all that from the franchisor, but like you said, they have to have their own goals, and it's really unique to them. And, you know, we give people an outline. We tell them this is something that you're, you know, it's just not for financing and getting a loan. This is for your own.
Right.
You know, to review your own goals. It's a must.
Well, and I think a good business plan is just critical to any business person. We actually have a form here at my law firm that we have attorneys fill out every year that's, it's pretty simple. It's a two-pager, but it really helps people stay focused on the business development aspect of being a lawyer. And I think any business owner probably should have a business plan and should have it in writing. Most people say, I've got it and it's in my head.
Right, right.
But when you're transitioning to something like a franchise, you really need to put it on paper.
Absolutely. Do you recommend that the business owner write it themselves, Kevin? I mean, I know there's a lot of services out there where you can hire somebody to write the business plan for you, which I'm kind of against. You know, I think a business plan kind of forces you to go through all the different scenarios that can occur. Do you suggest that they do write the business plan themselves?
I think the first crack of the business plan should definitely be done by the business owner.
Right.
You know, if you're looking to raise capital, you may want to professionalize the business plan after you put your thoughts on paper. You may want to hire somebody to turn your written product into something that you can take out to the investment community or the financing community. And
right.
That may make sense. But nobody is going to understand your business like you do. And so if you hire somebody, some third party, to write your business plan, that person's probably going to miss a lot of stuff.
I agree, absolutely. It's interesting.
Kevin, are there any resources to help people through the business plan creation? I guess we've maybe touched on this a little bit.
Yeah, you know, there are sections in you know, your local bookstore. Go to Barnes & Noble or go to your local library in the business section, and you'll find book after book on business plans. There's also some good software programs out there that will help you. You know, they basically go through and they prompt you with questions. Okay, think about this, think about that, and they oftentimes have tables in them that will allow you to actually plug in numbers.
Right.
And
right.
So if you're really going to do something that requires some financial planning, it probably makes sense to invest, you know, $100 or $200 and buy some of that software that's out there.
I agree.
That's always a big question with the business plan. When our lenders are reviewing a loan package, they're always reviewing the projections that people have to do for a couple of years. And, you know, lenders don't want to see that the a red flag can be raised if people feel they might be making too much money the first couple of years, or their, you know, their goals are set too high. So you always have
right.
to find that fine line. You don't want to make it too low with their sales and profit, or too high. You know, what's your feeling on that, Kevin?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. And I think, to me, the big issue, and certainly we see this time and time again, is whatever your projections are, assume you're going to only hit half of them, and make sure you have sufficient working capital so that you can ride out the rough times.
Right.
You know, and you know, to go back to the point of starting a new franchise system, you know, a lot of times franchisors, rightly or wrongly, come in pretty thinly capitalized, and they become very dependent on those initial franchise sales. And the risk is, if you're overly dependent on that, that you make bad choices simply because people can write a check. And,
right.
and you certainly don't want to start your system with the wrong franchisees merely because you need the capital to keep the doors open.
Interesting.
Yeah, I see a lot of franchisees doing that, just wanting to add numbers, not really, you know, many of the loans we do, Kevin, are startup loans, so we see a lot of people who just don't have that cash reserve. You maybe have enough to pay the franchise fee and maybe have a little equity in their home, and we always make sure we include working capital in the financing with the lenders we work with, but we see a lot of people who really shouldn't have been referred to us in the first place. Even though there's working capital alone, if that new franchisee starts to struggle a little bit, there's not much for them to fall back on. The franchisor is not really, you know, giving that franchisee the, you know, the best chance in the world. You should always plan for worst case and have that reserve. You know, I guess the better franchisors set their criteria higher for
right,
you know, accepting
right. And I think,
right.
you know, certainly the successful ones that I've worked with have, you know, pretty high net worth requirements, have substantial capital requirements, have substantial cash requirements.
Experience.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Don, but I think a typical SBA loan will probably finance up to 80% of the total project cost.
Right, and that's 75 to 80 range,
okay,
right, for a starter.
But, you know, it's a heck of a lot safer for both the franchisor and the franchisee if you're financing something more like 50% of the cost.
Right.
And you have that much additional cash available in the event things don't turn out the way that you think they are.
Right.
You know, and we have unforeseen events happen all the time. I mean, think about all the franchisees that opened in New Orleans in the first and second quarter of 2005. They could never have seen
right
what was going to happen there. And you really just have to plan. You have to be able to plan for the unexpected.
And have something like outside income. You know, lenders like it when there's where the franchisee is not going to be dependent on income from that new franchise to pay their personal expenses. Another spouse is working, or they have a good chunk saved up in retirement, or even be able to use some of that retirement money to roll over towards a down payment on a franchise and hold on to a lot of their other cash. It's different options. It's all the stuff we look at. I mean, you're right. You can never know what will happen. So you got to plan really on, whereas with a lot of franchises, you do make money the first year, but really plan on not making money the first year.
Right, and that actually sort of takes me to another point, which is, you know, some franchises are really merely job replacement franchises. I mean,
right.
if all you're doing is effectively buying a job, then the matrix is different than if you're really doing this because you're trying to take control of your life and you want to make not just a sound financial decision from a day-to-day pay perspective, but also an investment decision. And, you know, I think there are too many people who simply say, you know, I'm done with the workforce. I'm going to, you know, control my own destiny. And they get themselves into these franchises where they're not making much more than they would otherwise have made, and they become slaves to the business. And the worst is they become very dependent early on that income. And if they're not making the kind of margins they think that they're going to make early on, they really can struggle.
And it's a trickle-down effect, because then they are not as happy, and if you're not happy and have that positive attitude, it's going
right.
to show in the business. So
that's correct.
Marty
and they
and
don't validate well
that.
For the rest yeah. of the franchise system.
Right.
Absolutely. Kevin, are you able to stick around for another segment?
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Okay, so I think what we'll do here is we'll take another quick break, and we'll be right back with more franchise interviews on World Talk Radio, where the world comes to talk.
Good day, mate. Want to explore owning your own business? Yearn for the adventure of being the first in a new concept? You'll go positively ape over a Jungle Quest franchise. Beyond bouncing balls and inflatables, it's an indoor rock climbing and challenge course for kids. For ages 2 to 12, the center features zip lines, Burma bridges, swings, rock walls, tree houses, and tunnels. For 12 years, Jungle Quest has served 30,000 explorers with drop-ins and birthday parties, field trips, and camps. Now available as a franchise. Go to junglequest.net for more information. That's junglequest.net.
Create a rewarding future for you and your family as an Aaron's Sales and Lease Ownership franchisee. Aaron's is changing the way a growing and underserved market acquires necessities like furniture, appliances, electronics, and computers. The Aaron's franchise opportunity offers today's entrepreneurs you potential for profits and growth. Aaron's Sales and Lease Ownership is a division of Aaron's Rents Incorporated, a New York Stock Exchange-listed company with more than 50 years of enviable results. Aaron's is ranked number one in its category by Entrepreneur Magazine and 58th among franchise chains in worldwide sales by Franchise Times Magazine. Aaron's provides site selection assistance, comprehensive training, and traffic building marketing programs. Additionally, as a franchisee, you'll benefit from their national reputation, industry experience, operating systems, and manufacturing and distribution methods. For more information on the Aaron's franchise opportunity, call 1-800-551-6015. That's 1-800-551-6015.
855-651-6015 or go to aaronsfranchise.com. That's AARONS franchise.com.
Tap into a $41 billion a year industry with Garlic Jims. Did you know Americans eat about 100 acres of pizza every single day, or about 350 slices per second? Garlic Jims has spent years looking high and low for a higher quality pizza that is delivered quick enough so that you're still hungry when it arrives. Garlic Jims makes the most delicious gourmet pizza and at the same time provides excellent and fast service to your door. Garlic Jims has perfected the science of prompt pizza delivery by learning and experimenting. The exciting twist to this is great pizza. Never again will you have to choose between great pizza and great service. Are you interested in owning a Garlic Jims? We're currently accepting applications to participate in our exciting world of gourmet pizza delivery and carryout. Talk to us and find out how we sold nearly 100 franchises in six states in our first 2.5 years of operation. To get started right away, go to www.garlicjims.com. That's www.garlicjims.com. Or call us 425-918-1900. That's 425-918-1900. Garlic Jims.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, Asking the Entrepreneur Who Owns One. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then this is a show to listen to. And today's show is being brought to you by the Aaron's Sales and Lease Ownership Franchise Opportunity. And Aaron's is a New York Stock Exchange listed company in the rank number 58 among franchise chains in worldwide sales. Aaron's is reinventing the way a growing and underserved market acquires furniture, electronics, appliances, and computers. Now's a great time to join the Aaron's franchise family. And today's guest is Kevin Hine, who is one of the top franchise attorneys and experts in the country. And Kevin is a partner with the Denver office of Snell & Wilmer LLP, where he co-chairs the firm's retail and franchise services practice group. And Don, I think I'm up. In addition to the business plan that we were just talking about, what are the mandatory documents that one must create in order to offer and sell franchises?
Sure. Couple of things. First of all, in order to sell a franchise or offer a franchise anywhere in the United States, a franchise system has to have what's called a Uniform Franchise Offering Circular. That's a document, and it's a disclosure document. It's designed to inform a prospective franchisee about anything the prospect, not anything, let me back up, about certain information that the FTC has decided and various registration states have decided are critical pieces of information in order to make the franchisee knowledgeable about making the investment.
Right.
The document, as I mentioned in the last segment, is the same format regardless of the industry. So there's 23 items that every franchisor must discuss, and it covers everything from who's the franchisor, who are the key officers and directors, what's the investment, what are the franchisee's responsibilities, what are the franchisor's responsibilities, how many franchises are in the system, etc. The document also contains a copy of every agreement that the prospective franchisee could be required to sign at the beginning of the relationship. So it can be pretty thick.
Right.
Some systems are so big and so developed that they look like small telephone books.
Right.
And, it's a very, for most people, I think it's an intimidating document, but it's a really critical document for prospective franchisees to read and give careful consideration to.
Right.
And then the second thing
that ever happened, in the industry, Kevin, is having this UFOC. I don't know if you heard the first segment. We talked about the last 30 years, a little bit of history, an article in Entrepreneur, and all this regulation, things like the UFOC, is really what made franchising so successful.
Oh, I think that's absolutely correct. I did hear part of your segment, and I think when you look at the scams that happened in the 50s and 60s where people literally were selling franchise concepts that didn't exist,
right?
But they were really good salespeople, and there was no disclosure requirement. There was nothing. So, a silver-tongued salesman could sell anything. There's a great story about Minnie Pearl and the infamous Minnie Pearl chicken franchise. Most people know Minnie Pearl or recall her from her days with the Grand Ole Opry.
Right.
And somebody went out and invented a chicken franchise concept that supposedly she was affiliated with, and they were out there selling it, and she knew nothing about it. And literally they were taking people's investment dollars and disappearing into the night. And that really led to franchise regulation. The first law was passed in California in, I think, 1972. The Federal Trade Commission's law became effective in 1979. But as, Don, you had mentioned in some of the stuff you were reading, the history of franchising has, I think, in the last 30 years, been saved largely because of these disclosure requirements.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Should one consult a franchise attorney, Kevin? As you said, some of these documents, these UFOCs, could be quite intimidating. They're supposed to be written in layman's terms, but when you see something, as you say, like a telephone directory, I guess it could be quite overwhelming for somebody. Should someone consult a franchise attorney?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If somebody is looking to invest in a franchise of any kind, that one of the best ways they can spend dollars is to consult a franchise attorney. And again, it needs to be a franchise attorney, and that's for a couple of reasons.
Right.
First of all, they don't want to spend a lot of money with somebody who doesn't understand franchising. Because somebody who doesn't understand franchising is going to look at these documents and say, wow, this is crazy. I'd never do this. These documents are very one-sided, and by definition they are. They're very franchisor-friendly.
Right.
But I will tell you that if you're a franchisee in a system and you're a good operator and you follow the rules, those documents are your best friends, because those documents allow the franchisor to take care of the troubling franchisees. But if you bring these documents to somebody who's not a franchise attorney, they're either going to potentially dissuade you from purchasing a franchise because they think the documents are unfair, or they're going to spend a lot of time trying to mark them up and get them changed. And, the bottom line is, if you're buying a single-unit franchise, you have virtually no negotiating power, even with a small and emerging franchise company. And so you could spend a lot of your very scarce resources paying an attorney to mark up a document that's not going to get you anywhere. And that's why you want to go to somebody who understands franchising, will use your money wisely, will inform you of the risks and anything that may be odd or unusual about the particular franchise system you're looking at, but isn't going to try and rewrite the document on your nickel.
Absolutely.
That's a good point you made, yeah. Kevin, how even though it's pro-franchise UFOC, but overall it protects that franchisee, with other potential franchisees coming into the system. So, there is a lot of protection for you, thinking from that aspect.
Right. Absolutely.
And besides UFOC, you're having someone like yourself hiring your services, there's the review of the franchise agreement. And what are some of the other things that you can do for a franchisee?
Oh, that a franchise attorney can do?
Right.
The first thing you want to do is have the franchise attorney review the offering circular and the franchise agreement. And like I said, you want them really to focus on anything that's unusual, particularly onerous or kind of out of the box. And those are the things that you may be able to go back to a franchisor and say, gee, this is really unusual. This royalty is way out of line with everything else. Or, gee, I've never seen this kind of a fee before. Is there a way we can work with it? Oftentimes, the franchisor is going to say, this is the program, take it or leave it. But at least if you go in with your eyes open, you know what you're getting yourself into.
Right.
The other thing that a good franchise lawyer can help you with is to, incorporate the business you're going to operate the franchise under. If you're taking retail space, that lawyer should be able to help you find negotiate a lease. You're going to have employment issues in most franchise systems. Hopefully the lawyer either has the ability, him or herself, to give you some guidance on employment, or at least is in a firm that has an employment lawyer, so that when you start hiring employees and you bring people on board, if you have questions, you can get them answered. You want to look for somebody who comes from, has enough of a background or is with a large enough firm that you can get full service, because, as a business owner, you face all kinds of issues.
Right.
In addition to employment, you're going to have tax questions. You're going to have real estate questions. You might have questions that relate to, an encroachment. Somebody's encroaching on the piece of property that you own,
Right.
And so you want to work with a firm that, although you don't necessarily want to have to go to them all the time because that can get expensive, you want to know you've got access to people that can answer your questions quickly and efficiently.
Exactly. What else should one focus on, Kevin, when starting a franchise system?
Well, the other thing that's going to be critical is documenting those procedures that we talked about in an operations manual.
Right.
You know, we talked about the ease of replicating the system as being a critical component. Well, you not only have to be able to do it, but you have to be able to write it down and let other people know how to do it as well. And, you know, I've had clients come over the years who said, well, gee, I've got this binder of notes and scraps of paper and everything else, and I'm just going to kind of organize it and make that my operations manual. And I always tell them it takes it makes sense. It will be a good investment if you either take the time yourself to really write the operations manual or hire it out. There are great companies out there that can write operations manuals, because that manual is what really saves you from a lot of grief and heartache with your franchisees. If you've written it down and franchisees are getting up and running and they can go to the book and figure out how to do something, they're less likely to call you. If they don't know how to do it and they can't get access to it, then they're going to be on the phone to you all the time. And if you're trying to sell franchises, you don't want to spend a ton of time also having to worry about supporting your ongoing franchisees with easy day-to-day kinds of questions. And that's why an operations manual is absolutely critical.
And that must take a long time to write, too, I imagine, too, Kevin. You know, documenting it, you know, from, I guess, you know, starting from turning the lights on in the morning till going home at the end of the night, you know.
Absolutely.
I guess there's so
many variables
involved.
You know, when it comes to making a hamburger, you literally say, you know, get out the hamburger meat.
Right, exactly.
Get out the bun.
Step by step.
And you know, the operations manual doesn't just include step-by-step instructions. It includes everything from your supplier list, like who do I buy the hamburger meat from?
Right.
Who do I buy the hamburger bun from? To, you know, insurance requirements, to other operating requirements that may not impact necessarily what the franchisee does day-to-day, but overall tells the franchisee how to operate the business. And that's the other thing that franchisors need to remember, is that most franchisees are not sophisticated business people who have experience operating their own businesses.
Right.
Even if they attract people who've spent time in middle and senior management for big corporations, those people don't know what it's like to literally start a business from scratch, from incorporating it to setting up the accounting to getting the licenses and permits. And so the operations manual really needs to assume that you're starting every single time with franchisees who know absolutely nothing about not only the business that they're buying, but business in general.
Interesting.
Good point. So, Kevin, these are probably pretty busy days for you, you know, you and your office, with just the growth of the franchise industry. I mean, imagine you just have work, you know, work galore, right?
It is absolutely amazing. We're very blessed. We represent over 100 different franchise brands, and one of the areas that we, I think, excel in here at this firm is working with emerging franchise companies. The last 2 years, we rolled out more than a dozen new systems each year, and this year we're on pace to do something more like 18 to 20.
Wow,
and you mentioned again, Don, in the first segment that I think Entrepreneur Magazine said something like 900 new franchise systems have been created in the last 3 years.
Right.
And we certainly see that. We see lots and lots of great little niche concepts that are coming to the marketplace and coming to us and coming to other franchise firms to really get themselves out and into the marketplace.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I see it as well on financing. So many of the, you know, Marty and I talk about this a lot on the show, is all these little niche franchises. It'll be interesting to see where they go over the next few years.
Right.
All these concepts that started from, you know, eBay, and, you know, we mentioned coffee, and, I mean, there's so many niche markets. It's really amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin, we have about 30 seconds. What's the best way for someone to get in touch with you? Website, phone number?
Website at www.swlaw.com, or my phone number, 303-634-2015.
And I want to thank you again, Kevin. It was great to talk to you again, and we're definitely going to have you back, because I think there's more to talk about.
Listen, I'd love the opportunity. Thanks so much, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, Kevin. You have a great Memorial Day weekend.
All right, you too. Take care.
Nice. Thanks.
Take care, Kevin.
Bye.
Another great show, huh, Don?
Yeah.
Very informative. I mean, it's just there's so much more to talk about, though.
He's one of the tops in his field.
He really is. I mean, he really knows his stuff, you know, so it was a pleasure having him. So anyway, I want to wish you a happy Memorial Day weekend, Don. Great job today. And for our listeners, go to franchiseinterviews.com And again, we have about 30 shows you can listen to in the archive. So thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, Marty, have a good day.
Thanks, Don. You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.